This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thank you for joining me. I have a once-weekly podcast here on the Intelligent Medicine Network. I really like saying that. Anyway, I want to thank you for sending me your questions. Send them, please, to radioprogram@AOL.com and any comments, radioprogram@AOL.com. I am interested in what you want to hear more about within the realm of nutrition and health and lifestyle. These are all things that we have control over. Very important. A lot of us are worried about chronic disease and what we can do, and many people feel like they are at a loss if they have certain genetic predispositions for heart disease, for cancer, for diabetes, or even obesity. But you know what? So much of this is in your locus of control, should you choose to pay attention to that. So don't feel like a victim. You have control over what goes into your pie hole, your mouth. You have complete control over the foods that you choose to eat, for example. Okay? So I've got this commentary from Medscape, which is interesting, in line with this topic. What is killing us and what can we do about it? And this is why I want to drive home the idea of you have much more control than you think. Get a load of this. Okay, so mortality in the United States by the numbers. The National Center for Health Statistics, NCHS, they periodically publish data briefs which provide statistics on current public health topics in what they call a good straightforward format. And one such brief includes mortality data in the United States for the year 2015. And all of this is adjusted for gender, race, ethnicity, and cause of death. So, in 2015 in the United States, we had a total of 2,712,630 deaths that were registered. Now, the 10 leading causes of death: heart disease, cancer, chronic lower respiratory diseases, unintended injuries, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, influenza and pneumonia, kidney disease, and suicide accounted for 74% of all deaths. And interestingly, this report shows a slight 0.1-year reduction in life expectancy from 78.9 years to 78.8 years. That's a very, very slight reduction. Normally, our life expectancy grows up, right? Certainly, it's higher than it's ever been. Certainly, much more than it was 100 years, 200 years, half a million years ago. So the age-adjusted death rate increased from 724 deaths per 100,000 people in 2014 to 733 deaths per 100,000 deaths in 2015, okay? So the rate went up from 724 to 733 per 100,000 deaths from 2014 to the year 2015. So we have lots of statistics on risk of dying from various causes. These reports are often powerful and emotionally charged. We hear claims like prostate cancer is the second leading cause of death in men, right? More than 50,000 people will die of colon cancer this year. You hear this on the radio, you hear this on the television, these stats are being thrown at us left and right. And another one, 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. And these statements, of course, they make us worry, we're concerned, we're often confused, and we tend to give up that internal locus of control that we need to really maintain when we're bombarded with all of these statistics. So let me bring some balance to this, and this is why I'm bringing this up today. So the National Center for Health Statistics data brief tells us that the total age-adjusted mortality rate for 2015 in the United States was about 731 per 100,000 people, representing an increase of 1.2% over 2014. About 23% of these deaths were caused by heart disease and 22% by all cancers. These two categories are by far the biggest killers, and ranking a distant third was chronic lower respiratory disease, which was responsible for about 5.5% of all deaths. Now, the NCHS took this data and compared it to data from the National Cancer Institute, and the most recent data from 2013, the 2013 death rate from colon cancer, and here's where I'm trying to bring some reality. The 2013 death rate from colon cancer, according to National Cancer Institute, was 14.5 per 100,000 deaths. Think about that. Of 100,000 deaths, 14.5 were from colon cancer. From breast cancer, it was 20.7 of 100,000 deaths. And from prostate cancer, it was 19.2 of 100,000 deaths. This is in the year 2013. This brings a little more reality, right? Anybody calming down a little bit from these numbers? So these numbers make it clear that only a small proportion of deaths each year are from these three well-publicized cancers, colon, breast, prostate. The 50,000 annual colon cancer deaths account for only about 2% of all deaths. So think 2% of 2,712,630 deaths in 2015. 2%. From colon cancer, 1 in 8 women who live to age 80 will get breast cancer, but only about 3% of annual deaths are the result of this disease. And I have to say that you often hear this, 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer. 1 in 8 women, what they neglect to say is 1 in 8 women who live to age 80 will get breast cancer, and only about 3% of annual deaths are the result of this disease. That is 3% of 2,712,630 deaths in 2015. And although it's the second leading cause of cancer death in men, prostate cancer is the cause of only 2.5% of all annual deaths. So, what do we do? To improve health and reduce death rates, efforts must focus on preventing the leading causes of death, whether it's screening, early detection. Most in the medical community say that screening and early detection of cancer or heart disease will not make as big an impact as preventing these diseases. And prevention is where we all have control, don't we? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention claim that avoiding tobacco, increasing physical activity, and healthier eating could prevent about 900,000 deaths of the 2.7 million, or about one-third of all deaths annually. Wow. We can prevent way, 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 way more. So, understanding causes of mortality can help to prioritize preventive services. These preventive services aren't happening in your doctor's office. These preventive services are happening at home, in your kitchen, in your exercise program. Okay. So when we can share with patients the dramatic impact of lifestyle change on prevention of disease, then they can all make informed choices about healthier lifestyles. The real impact on health will come when patients understand the dramatic role that lifestyle plays on actual health outcomes. Imagine 900,000 deaths of the 2.7 million, or about one-third of all deaths, can be prevented. And it all starts with you. So, we have to educate patients and model in our own lives the positive impact of exercise, healthy eating, smoking cessation on morbidity and mortality. So, very important information. And a lot of my nutrition counseling, I focus on this, but particularly what I started saying to you in the beginning of this podcast, which is, everything is within your locus of control. Don't think that our outcomes are so dependent on external factors. You know, you're not going to get hit by a bus crossing 6th Avenue if you look both ways and are careful. That's prevention, right? Okay, so that was a little bit of an extreme analogy, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean. On to other things I wanted to share with you. In the journal Lipids, this came out in January of this year's study, on, you know, I've talked about a little bit about lipoprotein little a, LPA, is an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And there are currently very limited therapeutic options to lower lipoprotein A levels. We know how to lower triglycerides, right? That's an independent risk factor for heart disease. We know how to boost good HDL, right? A bigger garbage truck, by eating more fat and exercising more. And we know that we can make our LDL better, making them bigger, fluffy, less atherogenic particles by making lifestyle and diet changes, particularly diet changes. But there's very little, it's very limited what we could do about lipoprotein little a, which is an independent risk factor. So there is a study in Lipids in January of this year. L-carnitine and simvastatin, which is Zocor, a common statin, Zocor, reduces lipoprotein little a levels compared with just Zocor alone. Interesting. And this was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study. Hey, when it's randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled, this is the gold standard in scientific research. This was done in the Department of Internal Medicine Medical School in Greece, Department of Cardiology, a hospital in Athens, Greece, and also another lipid outpatient clinic in Greece, first cardiology clinic, School of Medicine, University of Athens in Greece. Okay, so the aim of the study was to compare the effect of L-carnitine, very important amino acid, and Zocor, co-administration with that of Zocor monotherapy, meaning Zocor alone, on lipoprotein little a levels in subjects with mixed hyperlipidemia, mixed high cholesterol, triglycerides, and elevated lipoprotein little a concentration. So here were the methods. The subjects with levels of low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, LDL, of greater than 160, triglycerides of greater than 150, and lipoprotein little a of greater than 20 were included in this study. And subjects were randomly allocated to receive L-carnitine in 2 grams a day plus Zocor 20 milligrams a day in 29 subjects, or a placebo plus Zocor 20 milligrams a day in 29 subjects for a total of 12 weeks. What they found was lipoprotein little a was significantly reduced in the L-carnitine Zocor group, but not in the Zocor only group versus baseline for comparison between the groups, and similar significant reductions in total cholesterol, LDL, triglycerides were observed in both groups. We know that cholesterol does come down with Zocor or statin therapy, but lipoprotein little a was significantly reduced in the group taking both L-carnitine and Zocor, but not in those taking the placebo and Zocor. So Zocor is really no good for lipoprotein little a at all. So, co-administration of L-carnitine was only associated with a very modest... Co-administration of L-carnitine with simvastatin was associated with a significant reduction in lipoprotein little a compared with Zocor alone in these subjects. Now, another thing that we do know is vitamin C. There is some limited research on vitamin C intake helping to lower lipoprotein little a. So if you've got this risk factor and you're doing everything else right, you're eating, you're exercising, and I've seen this among some of our patients who are doing everything right. Their cholesterols are great, their triglycerides are great, their blood sugars are great, but yet they have this intractable high lipoprotein little a. We give them carnitine, we give them vitamin C, and we do see modest reductions in lipoprotein little a, and it helps. It works. Another study, this is in neurology. This was from last fall in October 2016. You've heard me talk about calcium before, and this is important. Calcium supplementation and risk of dementia in women with cerebrovascular disease. This was done in the Department of Neuropsychiatric Epidemiology, in the Neurochemistry Laboratory in Sweden, also in London, and let's see, in Sweden and in London. All right. So the objective was to determine whether calcium supplementation is associated with the development of dementia in women after a 5-year follow-up. So what they did, the method was, this was a longitudinal population-based study. And the sample was derived from the prospective population study of women and the birth cohort study in Gothenburg, Sweden, and included 700 dementia-free women aged 70 to 92 years. So at baseline in the years 2000 and at follow-up in the years 2005-2006, the women underwent comprehensive neuropsychiatric and somatic examinations. A CT scan was performed in 447 participants at baseline, and information on the use and dosage of calcium supplements was collected. So women treated with calcium supplements, which were 98 in the population, they found were at higher risk of developing dementia, and the subtype stroke-related dementia, vascular dementia and mixed dementia than women who were not given supplementation, which was about 602. So calcium supplementation was associated with development of dementia in groups with a history of stroke or presence of white matter lesions, but not in groups without those lesions. So what they concluded was that is calcium supplementation may increase the risk of developing dementia in elderly women with cerebrovascular disease. Interesting. So one supplement fits all? One dosage of calcium fits all? Absolutely not. And this is always my argument for having some kind of supervision when you're embarking on a lifestyle change, a nutrition program, a supplement regimen. Not everybody should be taking the same amount of calcium or any calcium at all. If you have a history of cerebrovascular disease or stroke in your family or anything else, we would have to be careful about the amount of calcium that you're taking in a supplement. All further proof of one size does not fit all. We all have a unique biochemistry, and it pays to have all of this assessed and have a comprehensive nutrition consult. So I want to thank you again for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.